The internet has brought us a lot of good things. Our access to recipes, movie credits, shopping has never been better. But there are downsides. One of those downsides, according to our next guest, is that the world of the online amplifies our power to publicly shame people. He says an offensive tweet or a minor scandal may be deserving of criticism, but things have gotten way out of proportion. In his new book, John Ronson interviews people who have been at the receiving end of the global shaming machine about how it affected their lives long after the initial outcry died down. John Ronson is a journalist, documentary maker, and author. His newest book is called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. He joins us now from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. John, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, nice to be here.
Well, John, shame has always been with us. It's part of history. What's different about shame and shaming in the modern era that got your attention?
The renaissance of shaming on social media is, I think, way worse than it's ever been for so many reasons. It stays around forever. It's wildly out of proportion to the crime. People are being destroyed for bad phraseology. Somebody tells a joke that lands badly, a kind of liberal joke that lands badly, and they are defined for the rest of their lives by some bad phraseology. And then I would meet these people. I would do what nobody else would do, which is actually journey to their homes and meet the people that we destroyed, and they were crushed, they were mangled, and it's carnage.
Well, it's an interesting thing because it seemed like at first this could have been a good thing in your mind, as though justice was being democratized, giving voice to the voiceless and all of that, and then you had your own firsthand experience with public shaming. What's changed in your mind about the way you've thought about it?
You know what I think the problem is that you're right. I mean, we shame people appropriately and we have power in a way that we haven't had power before. So, for instance, I mean, I can think of a million appropriate shamings. Let's say when the NYPD put a man called Eric Garner in a chokehold and he died and nobody was indicted. And as a result of social media, there were protests and they were powerful. And now my guess is that the next time the NYPD has somebody in a chokehold, they might think twice. But I think the problem is that we cannot differentiate on social media between an appropriate shaming and an inappropriate shaming. Our ferocity, you know, the heat of our flame is just as strong for somebody who deserves it as doesn't deserve it. And so somebody making a gag, a liberal joke that comes out badly, gets utterly torn apart. So that's what changed it for me. I'll give you an example.
Sure.
Okay, a woman called Justine Sacco. I mean, she's really kind of ground zero of social media shaming. Just before getting on a plane to Africa, she tweeted, "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding, I'm white." So what she was trying to do in a very badly worded way was make a kind of, you know, joke about privilege. She wasn't trying to gleefully flaunt privilege. She was trying to make a joke about privilege in much the same way as, you know, Randy Newman would do in his songs or South Park. But while she slept on the plane and was completely oblivious, her tweet went around the world. Millions and millions of people read that tweet and just decided that she was a racist monster who had to be fired. And also had to be defined forever by that tweet. And the fact that she was oblivious to this destruction was part of the hilarity, the fact that we were about to watch this woman get fired in real time before she even knew she was being fired. It's so profoundly undemocratic and so profoundly unjust.
And you talked with her. How did this experience affect her after the outcry was over?
Crushed, I mean, broken. I met her in a bar a couple of weeks later. You know, she had barely stopped crying for weeks. It mangles your mental health. She said she would wake up in the middle of the night forgetting who she was. She thought if she was in an accident and lost her memory and then came back and Googled herself, that would be her new reality. She was the monstrous racist AIDS tweets woman. Not only was she fired, but the newspapers were following her to the gym. Almost nobody was defending her because people were too scared to, because social media can be so ferocious. The language that's used is so ferocious. It's like the bullies took over the school.
We're talking with John Ronson now. He's the author of So You've Been Publicly Shamed, talking about the shame culture that we live in online right now. And John, you didn't speak with her in time for your book, but when we think about public shaming, Monica Lewinsky comes to mind, and she recently did a TED Talk about her experience. Here's a clip.
This scandal was brought to you by the digital revolution. It was the first time the traditional news was usurped by the internet for a major news story. What that meant for me personally was that overnight, I went from being a completely private figure to a publicly humiliated one worldwide. I was patient zero of losing a personal reputation on a global scale almost instantaneously.
A clip there from Monica Lewinsky's TED Talks. Now, you talked with her a while back. What did she tell you about what that experience meant to her and shaped her?
Funnily enough, I could tell how vulnerable Monica still was because I met her a week or two ago and we did an interview together for VanityFair.com, and she wanted to interview me about my book. And whenever I tried to talk to her about what happened to her, she kind of said, oh, you know, let's talk about that another time. So she was still, I think it took an awful lot of courage for her to stand up and give that TED Talk. And I thought she did an absolutely beautiful job. You know, there was a line in that TED Talk that really touched me after being a journalist for 30 years and also somebody who's been writing about public shaming for the last 3 years. She said something like, people forget that I am dimensional and there was a time when I wasn't broken. And there's a game being played on social media where we all pretend that everybody's either... We don't know it's a game. We've kidded ourselves into believing it's real life, where everybody is either a magnificent hero or a sickening villain. Everybody's either just the best person ever or the worst person ever. But we know in our hearts that human beings are dimensional. We're clever and we're stupid. We use good phrasing and we use bad phrasing. We are honest and we make mistakes. And yet, on social media, we've created a stage for these artificial high dramas that that are incredibly damaging for the people at the centre of them.
It is high drama, and it seems as though it might be hard to turn the ship on something like this once it gets going. But, you know, speaking about Monica Lewinsky, she has been speaking out against the culture of public humiliation and trying to get people to back off it a little. Do you think there's hope for that to happen in the age that we live in?
Well, I hope so, but there's a bit of messenger shooting going on too. You know, I'm getting the odd. It's funny, for 30 years I've been writing about abuses of power, about powerful people doing crazy and absurd things. For me, the first time ever that I've been really criticised for it is with this book, is when I'm saying, you know who are the powerful, crazy people now? Us. It's like people love it when I say that about the pharmaceutical industry in my book, The Psychopath Test, or, you know, powerful elites in my book, Them. As soon as I say we are the powerful, crazy people now, a lot of people try and, you know, muddy my name. So whether it's going to make a difference, I don't know. But I will say that, you know, if you read my book, which is quite a sort of dreadful experience, you know, people tell me that their heart pounds when they read this book. You know, they feel the anxiety of what it is to be at the end of one of these shaming campaigns. I think if you read my book and if you watch Monica's TED Talk, which explains, you know, what it feels like so beautifully as well, I think it's going to be harder to shame people. Because once you've visited the slaughterhouse, it's kind of harder to eat the steak.
Well, another aspect of this, which could point people in that direction, is the work of a psychiatrist named James Gilligan, who says there's a link between violence and shame. What has he found?
Oh, he is such a smart man, James Gilligan. This is a Harvard psychiatrist who, for the first part of his life, just treated, as he described it, normal neurotics like you and me. And then he got himself involved in the maximum security prison world in Massachusetts because there'd been an epidemic of violence and killings. People were killing each other in the most awful ways inside prison. So he went in to try and make sense of it. And to cut a long story short, what he discovered, as he said to me, was that every single murderer he spoke to had a central secret. And that secret was that they felt ashamed, deeply, chronically, profoundly ashamed, because as children they'd been beaten, scolded, abused, insulted physically and mentally. And it's no coincidence, he said, that the that the people who occupy the most violent spectrum in adult life, you know, were treated equally violently as children. And Gilligan said something to me which I thought was so profound and beautiful, and something that, you know, we should all remember, which is that he said, all violence is an attempt to replace shame with self-esteem, which isn't to excuse violence, but it is to understand it. And so while we are knee-jerk, trigger-happy shamers on social media, Gilligan's work is so important in reminding us that even the worst people, the people in maximum security prisons who've committed murder, benefit from empathy.
Hearing that and the stories of the people that you speak to, is shame ever a useful emotion, given that it may lead to violence, that it ruins people's lives? Is shame useful? Does it have a public corrective that is useful to society?
You know, when I was in the bubble of writing this book, when I was hanging out with people like James Gilligan, I was rather convinced by the idea that, you know, shaming is never good. You know, the only way to get out of this sort of, you know, echo chamber of shaming is to just step out of it and refuse to shame. But now that the book's out, I sort of feel that maybe that's a bit Disney. And, you know, if just today, I mean, every day there's another shaming on Twitter. And just today, there was a horrible photograph went around Twitter of a woman hunter who shot a giraffe and was lying jubilantly next to the body of the giraffe. And when I saw that, I was, you know, like everybody else, I was horrified. And you know, I was very careful in my book to only write about people who I felt their punishment was disproportionate to their crime, ordinary people whose transgressions were very slight. I mean, one message of this book is that shaming is an incredibly powerful thing, you know, very powerful. It mangles people's mental health. And the power is in our hands now because everybody is scared of us on social media. So it is our responsibility to be judicious, to use our shaming wisely, because there's no rule book right now. So we have to make the rules ourselves. So I think, you know, there are appropriate shamings, but there's an awful lot of inappropriate ones too.
We're talking right now about a new culture of public shaming with John Ronson. His new book is called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think we're too quick to shame people for their tweets, their misjudgments? Do we remember that people are multidimensional? And does the punishment fit the crime? Call 800-642-1234. We're continuing our conversation with John Ronson. His new book is called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. He looks at the modern day culture of shaming, talks to people who have been the subject of outcries on social media, and says the punishment for minor offenses can get way out of proportion with the original crime. You can join in. Have you ever done this? Have you piled on in an online scandal? Do you agree that there can be a tendency to overreact, or have the rules changed so we should all just be more careful? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR is our Twitter handle. And we go now to Dennis. Dennis joins us from Red Granite. Hi, Dennis.
I just think if people go out there and put things on social media, they're opening themselves up. They're putting their life out there for public to see. And if they say or do something stupid, what do they think is going to happen?
All right, Dennis. Thanks. Dennis, pretty much in essence saying live by the sword, die by the sword when it comes to social media. What do you make of that, John?
You know, I don't buy that for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because when Twitter started, it was really a kind of, it felt like a sort of Garden of Eden, you know, the silence had a voice. People were finding their voice, and it was like an eloquent voice. It was a levelling of the playing field, and it was kind of beautiful. People, and, you know, why take that away from people, you know, the chance to be able to broadcast their voice in an eloquent and funny and passionate way? And secondly, Justine Sacco, the woman I talked about earlier who did the bad joke about AIDS, she had 170 Twitter followers. nobody ever replied to her tweets. Like, when the New York Times phoned her up to fact-check my book extract, they said to her, were you surprised before you got on the plane that nobody replied to your joke? She said, nobody ever replied to my joke. So I really don't think it was unreasonable for Justine to not expect, while she slept on a plane, for her life to be utterly destroyed. She shouldn't have needed to expect that would happen.
Well, thank you for the call, Dennis. And we're going to go next to Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Well, hi, Veronica. Something happened with my... Well, I was reading a friend's Facebook account, and you know the singer Michelle Schock?
Uh-huh.
Well, she supposedly... Well, she made these comments at a concert, which made it sound like she was this horrible homophobic person. And everybody on the Facebook account was just saying, oh, how could she be this way? I've never, I can't believe she turned into this raving maniac. And she had all her concerts canceled. And I just looked a little deeper into the story, and she made the statement that, to me, totally explained why she said that. She was just being sarcastic. She didn't really, those weren't her beliefs. And I believed her. And I posted that on that Facebook account, and nobody spoke to me again. And I just felt like it was an example of how people will read something online and they don't really know much about it, but they just instantly make a decision about it. And I don't know why that is. I feel like people are just thinking more superficially than they used to, or maybe it's when they're just on the internet. I don't know, I don't know whatever happened to Michelle Schacht. But
got it. Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate that. And
I can answer the second part of that question, because Michelle Schacht actually came to my event a couple of days ago in Los Angeles.
Oh, what'd she say?
Well, I didn't talk to her, but I saw her sitting in the audience. I know that, I'm sure that she regrets the comments that she made on stage, and I think she hasn't been able to get any bookings for the last couple of years as a result of them.
Do you think that people are too quick, just read the tweet, a few lines of text there, and then make a decision instead of looking for the context, the multidimensionality that Monica Lewinsky was kind of talking about there?
Yeah, we are on social media. We are like toddlers crawling towards a gun. We have these knee-jerk responses to some phraseology that, it doesn't matter if it's taken out of context, doesn't matter if it's nuanced, but the nuance doesn't come through. We're just in love with what we believe is attacking people who are misusing their privilege, but actually what it is just beating people up.
Why do you think that is? I mean, do we get pleasure out of that? Do we like to see people punished? Does it appeal to some sort of reptilian part of our brain that likes things to be very black and white?
Sometimes I think it's like it's just the desire to do good, to be seen to be empathetic people. It's always, the people who are shamed these days are people who are seen to have misused their privilege. And of course, that's a better thing to shame somebody for than, the things that we used to shame people for in the 19th century, like, adulterous affairs or whatever. But the problem is we're so in love with getting people who have misused their privilege that we've really let our standards slip. We're getting people for anything, and then we just excuse it as they're another person misusing their privilege. So sometimes I think it's the desire to be seen to be empathetic that's leading us to do these incredibly unempathetic acts. Other times I think it's just cruelty. Sometimes I think it's just people who prefer ideology over humanity, and that's always dangerous. When other human beings are just a blank canvas for you to put your ideology onto. I think some of that goes on social media too. It's terribly destructive.
Let's take another call here. Josh is with us in Madison. Hi, Josh.
Yeah, hi. I had a question for your guest as to whether or not he thinks that, or what he thinks of public officials that deserve shaming, but appear not to be effective or act like they're not. Do you think that they, on some level, they do feel shame as a result of a shame campaign in a situation where maybe they might deserve to be shamed?
So Josh, I guess, kind of saying that with some public officials, I'm not sure who in particular he's thinking of, but maybe there's cause for shame and some people don't seem to feel it.
I mean, my theory, you know, my last book before this one was a book about psychopaths called The Psychopath Test. And you could say that psychopaths don't feel shame. They don't feel remorse or anxiety or guilt because that part of the brain underperforms, whether it's through nature or nurture is, you know, the jury's out. But honestly, I think those people are really few and far between. I mean, you know, they say that 1 in 100 regular people is a psychopath, which means 99 out of 100 aren't. And my guess is that a public shaming is an incredibly powerful weapon, incredibly effective. And I think, you know, the vast majority of people get really hurt by it. And one of the great ironies of this, of course, is that, you know, there's a woman in my book called Lindsay Stone who made a joke at Arlington Cemetery, which, my God, she's paid for. She posed in front of the silence and respect sign in front of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier as this kind of douchey joke. She pretended to shout and flip the finger. This was like a running joke where she would pose in front of signs and do the opposite. Such a lovely woman. Her job was to work with adults with learning difficulties. And the joke, you know, backfired and she was publicly shamed across the internet, fell into deep depression, didn't leave home for a year and a half. One of the ironies of that is that it's the sweetest people who suffer the most when it comes to a public shaming.
Do you think it's just that in that instant captured forever that something can never really be seen in its entirety? That moment, say, with Lindsay might have been a second of a joke with a lot of respect at other points. Is it just taken out of context?
Yeah, and yes, and it's such a dangerous thing to do. This kind of constant swinging pendulum on social media between celebrating heroes and vilifying villains. Yeah, in real life, you know, there aren't many magnificent heroes and there aren't many significant, you know, aren't many sickening villains. What almost all of us are kind of in the middle, right? And that's the grown-up way of treating human beings, as being dimensional. That beautiful line of Monica Lewinsky's, people forget that I was dimensional. If my book does anything, I hope it just reminds people that people are dimensional.
John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with John Ronson, a journalist, documentary maker, and author. His newest book is called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. Coming up, nearly 9 out of 10 Americans are now covered by health insurance. We'll find out what's drawing more people to find coverage. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is back tomorrow. You're listening to Central Time.